Faith of the Fallen by Terry Goodkind. Copyright 2000 by Terry Goodkind. Read by John Kenneth. Performance copyright 2000 by Brilliance Corporation. All rights reserved. Faith of the Fallen. Chapter 1. She didn't remember dying. With an obscure sense of apprehension, she wondered if the distant, angry voices drifting into her meant she was again about to experience that transcendent ending, death. There was absolutely nothing she could do about it if she was. While she didn't remember dying, she dimly recalled, at some later point, solemn whispers saying that she had, saying that death had taken her, but that he had pressed his mouth over hers and filled her still lungs with his breath, his life, and in so doing had rekindled hers. She had had no idea who it was that spoke of such an inconceivable feat, or who he was. That first night, when she had perceived the distant disembodied voices as little more than a vague notion, she had grasped that there were people around her who didn't believe, even though she was again living, that she would remain alive through the rest of the night. But now she knew she had. She had remained alive many more nights, perhaps in answer to desperate prayers and earnest oaths whispered over her that first night. But if she didn't remember the dying, she remembered the pain before passing into that great oblivion. That pain she never forgot. She remembered fighting alone and savagely against all those men baring their teeth like a pack of wild hounds with a hare. She remembered the rain of brutal blows driving into the ground, heavy boots slamming into her once she was there, and the sharp snap of bones. She remembered the blood, so much blood, on their fists, on their boots. She remembered the searing terror of having no breath to gasp at the agony, no breath to cry out against the crushing weight of hurt. Sometime after, whether hours or days, she didn't know, when she was lying under clean sheets in an unfamiliar bed and had looked up into his gray eyes, she knew that for some, the world reserved pain worse than she had suffered. She didn't know his name. The profound anguish so apparent in his eyes told her beyond doubt that she should have. More than her own name, more than life itself, she knew she should have known his name. But she didn't. Nothing had ever shamed her more. Thereafter, whenever her own eyes were closed, she saw his, saw not only the helpless suffering in them, but also the light of such fierce hope as could only be kindled by righteous love. Somewhere, even in the worst of the darkness blanketing her mind, she refused to let the light in his eyes be extinguished by her failure to will herself to live. At some point she remembered his name. Most of the time she remembered it. Sometimes she didn't. Sometimes, when pain smothered her, she forgot even her own name. Now, as Kalin heard men growling his name, she knew it. She knew him. With tenacious resolution, she clung to that name, Richard, and to her memory of him, of who he was, of everything he meant to her. Even later, when people had feared she would yet die, she knew she would live. She had to. For Richard, her husband, for the child she carried in her womb, his child, their child. The sounds of angry men calling Richard by name at last tugged Kalin's eyes open. She squinted against the agony that had been tempered, if not banished, while in the cocoon of sleep. She was greeted by a blush of amber light filling the small room around her. Since the light wasn't bright, she reasoned that there must be a covering over a window muting the sunlight, or maybe it was dusk. Whenever she woke, as now, she not only had no sense of time, but no sense of how long she had been asleep. She worked her tongue against the pasty dryness in her mouth. Her body felt leaden with a thick, lingering slumber. She was as nauseated as the time when she was little and had eaten 3 candy green apples before a boat journey on a hot, windy day. It was hot like that now. Summer hot. She struggled to rouse herself fully, but her awaking awareness seemed adrift, bobbing in a vast, shadowy sea. Her stomach roiled. She suddenly had to put all her mental effort into not throwing up. She knew all too well that in her present condition, few things hurt more than vomiting. Her eyelids sagged closed again, and she floundered to a place darker yet. She caught herself, forced her thoughts to the surface, and willed her eyes open again. She remembered. They gave her herbs to dull the pain and to help her sleep. Richard knew a good deal about herbs. At least the herbs helped her drift into stuporous sleep. The pain, if not as sharp, still found her there. Slowly, carefully, so as not to twist what felt like double-edged daggers skewered here and there between her ribs, she drew a deeper breath. The fragrance of balsam and pine filled her lungs, helping to settle her stomach. It was not the aroma of trees among other smells in the forest, among damp dirt and toadstools and cinnamon ferns, but the redolence of trees freshly felled and limbed. She concentrated on focusing her sight and saw beyond the foot of the bed a wall of pale, newly peeled timber, here and there oozing sap from fresh axe cuts. The wood looked to have been split and hewn in haste, yet its tight fit betrayed a precision only knowledge and experience could bestow. The room was tiny. In the confessor's palace, where she had grown up, a room this small would not have qualified as a closet for linens. Moreover, it would have been stone, if not marble. She liked the tiny wooden room. She expected that Richard had built it to protect her. It felt almost like his sheltering arms around her. Marble, with its aloof dignity, never comforted her in that way. Beyond the foot of the bed, she spotted a carving of a bird in flight. It had been sculpted with a few sure strokes of a knife into a log of the wall, on a flat spot only a little bigger than her hand. Richard had given her something to look at. On occasion, sitting around a campfire, she had watched him casually carve a face or an animal from a scrap of wood. The bird, soaring on wings spread wide as it watched over her, conveyed a sense of freedom. Turning her eyes to the right, she saw a brown wool blanket hanging over the doorway. From beyond the doorway came fragments of angry, threatening voices.
"It's not by our choice, Richard. We have our own families to think about, wives and children."
Wanting to know what was going on, Kaylin tried to push herself up onto her left elbow. Somehow her arm didn't work the way she had expected it to. Like a bolt of lightning, pain blasted up the marrow of her bone and exploded through her shoulder. Gasping against the racking agony of attempted movement, she dropped back before she had managed to lift her shoulder an inch off the bed. Her panting twisted the daggers piercing her sides. She had to will herself to slow her breathing in order to get the stabbing pain under control. As the worst of the torment in her arm and the stitches in her ribs eased, she finally let out a soft moan. With calculated calm, she gazed down the length of her left arm. The arm was splinted. As soon as she saw it, she remembered that, of course it was. She reproached herself for not thinking of it before she had tried to put weight on it. The herbs, she knew, were making her thinking fuzzy. Fearing to make another careless movement, and since she couldn't sit up, she focused her effort on forcing clarity into her mind. She cautiously reached up with her right hand and wiped her fingers across the bloom of sweat on her brow, sweat sown by the flash of pain. Her right shoulder socket hurt, but it worked well enough. She was pleased by that triumph, at least. She touched her puffy eyes, understanding then why it had hurt to look toward the door. Gingerly, her fingers explored a foreign landscape of swollen flesh. Her imagination colored it a ghastly black and blue. When her fingers brushed cuts on her cheek, hot embers seemed to sear raw, exposed nerves. She needed no mirror to know she was a terrible sight. She knew, too, how bad it was whenever she looked up into Richard's eyes. She wished she could look good for him, if for no other reason than to lift the suffering from his eyes. Reading her thoughts, he would say, "I'm fine. Stop worrying about me, and put your mind to getting better."
With a bittersweet longing, Kaelin recalled lying with Richard, their limbs tangled in delicious exhaustion, his skin hot against hers, his big hand resting on her belly as they caught their breath. It was agony wanting to hold him in her arms again and being unable to do so. She reminded herself that it was only a matter of some time and some healing. They were together, and that was what mattered. His mere presence was a restorative. She heard Richard beyond the blanket over the door speaking in a tightly controlled voice, stressing his words as if each had cost him a fortune. "We just need some time." The men's voices were heated and insistent as they all began talking at once. "It's not because we want to. You should know that, Richard. You'd know us. What if it brings trouble here? We've heard about the fighting. You said yourself she's from the Midlands. We can't allow... We won't." Kaelin listened, expecting the sound of his sword being drawn. Richard had nearly infinite patience but little tolerance. Kara, his bodyguard, their friend, was no doubt out there too. Kara had neither patience nor tolerance. Instead of drawing his sword, Richard said, "I'm not asking anyone to give me anything. I want only to be left alone in a peaceful place where I can care for her. I wanted to be close to Heartland in case she needed something." He paused. "Please, just until she has a chance to get better." Kaelin wanted to scream at him. "No, don't you dare beg them, Richard. They have no right to make you beg. They've no right. They could never understand the sacrifices you've made." But she could do little more than whisper his name in sorrow. "Don't test us. We'll burn you out if we have to. You can't fight us all. We have right on our side." The men ranted and swore dark oaths. She expected now at last to hear the sound of his sword being drawn. Instead, in a calm voice, Richard answered the men in words Kaelin couldn't quite make out. A dreadful quiet settled in.
"It's not because we'd like doing this, Richard," someone finally said in a sheepish voice. "We've no choice. We've got to consider our own families and everyone else."
Another man spoke out with righteous indignation.
"Besides, you seem to have gotten all high and mighty of a sudden, with your fancy clothes and sword, not like it used to be, back when you were a woods guide."
"That's right," said another. "Just because you went off and saw some of the world, that doesn't mean you can come back here thinking you're better than us."
"I've overstepped what you have all decided is my proper place," Richard said. "Is this what you mean to say?"
"You turned your back on your community, on your roots, as I see it. You think our women aren't good enough for the great Richard Cipher. No, he had to marry some woman from far away. Then you come back here and think to flaunt yourselves over us."
"How? By doing what? Marrying the woman I love? This you see as vain? This nullifies my right to live in peace and takes away her right to heal, to get well, and live?"
These men knew him as Richard Cipher, a simple woods guide, not as the person he had discovered he was in truth, and who he had become. He was the same man as before, but in so many ways they had never known him.
"You ought to be on your knees praying for the Creator to heal your wife," another man put in. "All of mankind is a wretched and undeserving lot. You ought to pray and ask the Creator's forgiveness for your evil deeds and sinfulness. That's what brought your troubles on you and your woman. Instead, you want to bring your troubles among honest working folks. You've no right to try to force your sinful troubles on us. That's not what the Creator wants. You should be thinking of us. The Creator wants you to be humble and to help others. That's why he struck her down, to teach you both a lesson."
"Did he tell you this, Albert?" Richard asked.
Does this creator of yours come to talk with you about his intentions and confide in you his wishes?
He talks to anyone who has the proper modest attitude to listen to him,
Albert fumed.
Besides,
another man spoke up,
this imperial order you warn about has some good things to be said for it. If you weren't so bullheaded, Richard, you'd see that. There's nothing wrong with wanting to see everyone treated decent. It's only being fair-minded. It's only right. Those are the Creator's wishes, you've got to admit. And that's what the Imperial Order teaches, too. If you can't see that much good in the Order, well, then you'd best be gone. And soon.
Kaelin held her breath. In an ominous tone of voice, Richard said,
so be it.
These were men Richard knew. He had addressed them by name and reminded them of years and deeds shared. He had been patient with them. Patience finally exhausted, he had reached intolerance. Horses snorted and stopped, their leather tack creaking as the men mounted up.
In the morning, we'll be back to burn this place down. We'd better not catch you or yours anywhere near here, or you'll burn with it.
After a few last curses, the men raced away. The sound of departing hooves hammering the ground rumbled through Kaelin's back. Even that hurt. She smiled a small smile for Richard, even if he couldn't see it. She wished only that he had not begged on her behalf. He would never, she knew, have begged for anything for himself. Light splashed across the wall as the blanket over the doorway was thrown back. By the direction and quality of the light, Kaelin guessed it had to be somewhere in the middle of a thinly overcast day. Richard appeared beside her, his tall form towering over her, throwing a slash of shadow across her middle. He wore a black sleeveless undershirt, without his shirt or magnificent gold and black tunic, leaving his muscular arms bare. At his left hip, the side toward her, a flash of light glinted off the pommel of his singular sword. His broad shoulders made the room seem even smaller than it had been only a moment before. His clean-shaven face, his strong jaw, and the crisp line of his mouth perfectly complemented his powerful form. His hair, a color somewhere between blonde and brown, brushed the nape of his neck. But it was the intelligence so clearly evident in those penetrating gray eyes of his that from the first had riveted her attention.
Richard,
Kaelin whispered,
I won't have you begging on my account.
The corners of his mouth tightening with a hint of a smile.
If I want to beg, I shall do so.
He pulled her blanket up a little, making sure she was snugly covered even though she was sweating. I didn't know you were awake.
How long have I been asleep?
A while.
She figured it must have been quite a while. She didn't remember arriving at this place, or him building the house that now stood around her. Kaelin felt more like a person in her 80s than one in her 20s. She had never been hurt before, not grievously hurt anyway, not to the point of being on the cusp of death and utterly helpless for so long. She hated it, and she hated that she couldn't do the simplest things for herself. Most of the time she detested that more than the pain. She was stunned to understand so unexpectedly and so completely life's frailty, her own frailty, her own mortality. She had risked her life in the past and had been in danger many times, but looking back, she didn't know if she had ever truly believed that something like this could happen to her. Confronting the reality of it was crushing. Something inside seemed to have broken that night. Some idea of herself, some confidence. She could so easily have died. Their baby could have died before it even had a chance to live.
You're getting better, Richard said, as if in answer to her thoughts. I'm not just saying that. I can see that you're healing.
She gazed into his eyes, summoning the courage to finally ask,
how do they know about the order way up here?
People fleeing the fighting have been up this way. Men spreading the doctrine of the Imperial Order have been even here, to where I grew up, Their words can sound good, almost make sense, if you don't think, if you just feel. Truth doesn't seem to count for much, he added in afterthought. He answered the unspoken question in her eyes. The men from the Order are gone. The fools out there were just spouting things they've heard, that's all.
But they intend us to leave. They sound like men who keep the oaths they've sworn.
He nodded, but then some of his smile returned. Do you know that we're very close to where I first met you last autumn? Do you remember?
How could I ever forget the day I met you?
Our lives were in jeopardy back then, and we had to leave here. I've never regretted it. It was the start of my life with you. As long as we're together, nothing else really matters. Kara swept in through the doorway and came to a halt beside Richard, adding her shadow to his across the blue cotton blanket that covered Kaelin to her armpits. Sheathed in skin-tight red leather, Kara's body had the sleek grace of a falcon, commanding, swift and deadly. Mord Sith always wore their red leather when they believed there was going to be trouble. Kara's long blonde hair, swept back into a single thick braid, was another mark of her profession of Mord Sith, member of an elite corps of guards to the Lord Rahl himself. Richard had, after a fashion, inherited the Mord Sith when he inherited the rule of Dahara, a place he grew up never knowing. Command was not something he had sought, nonetheless it had fallen to him. Now a great many people depended on him. The entire New World, Westland, the Midlands, and Dahara depended on him. How do you feel? Kara asked with sincere concern. Kaelin was able to summon little more voice than a hoarse whisper.
I'm better.
Well, if you feel better, Kara growled, then tell Lord Rahl that he should allow me to do my job and put the proper respect into men like that. Her menacing blue eyes turned for a moment toward the spot where the men had been while delivering their threats. The ones I leave alive, anyway. Kara, use your head, Richard said. We can't turn this place into a fortress and protect ourselves every hour of every day. Those men are afraid. No matter how wrong they are, they view us as a danger to their lives and the lives of their families. We know better than to fight a senseless battle when we can avoid it.
But, Richard,
Kaelin said, lifting her right hand in a weak gesture toward the wall before her,
you've built this...
Only this room. I wanted a shelter for you first. It didn't take that long. Just some trees cut and split. We've not built the rest of it yet. It's not worth shedding blood over. If Richard seemed calm, Kara looked ready to chew steel and spit nails. Would you tell this obstinate husband of yours to let me kill someone before I go crazy? I can't just stand around and allow people to get away with threatening the two of you. I am Mord Sith. Kara took her job of protecting Richard, the Lord Rahl of Dahara, and Kaelin very seriously. Where Richard's life was concerned, Kara was perfectly willing to kill first and decide later if it had been necessary. That was one of the things for which Richard had no tolerance. Kaelin's only answer was a smile. Father Confessor, you can't allow Lord Rahl to bow to the will of foolish men like those. Tell him! Kaelin could probably count on the fingers of one hand the people who in her whole life had ever addressed her by the name Kaelin without at minimum the appellation Confessor before it. She had heard her ultimate title, Mother Confessor, spoken countless times in tones ranging from awed reverence to shuddering fear. Many people, as they knelt before her, were incapable of even whispering through trembling lips the two words of her title. Others, when alone, whispered them with lethal intent. Kaelin had been named Mother Confessor while still in her early 20s, the youngest confessor ever named to that powerful position. But that was several years past. Now she was the only living confessor left. Kaelin had always endured the title, the bowing and kneeling, the reverence, the awe, the fear, and the murderous intentions, because she had no choice. But more than that, she was the Mother Confessor, by succession and selection, by right, by oath, and by duty. Kara always addressed Kaelin as Mother Confessor. But from Kara's lips, the words were subtly different than from any other's. It was almost a challenge, a defiance by scrupulous compliance, but with a hint of an affectionate smirk. Coming from Kara, Kaelin didn't hear Mother Confessor so much as she heard Sister. Kara was from the distant land of Dahara. No one anywhere outranked Kara, as far as Kara was concerned, except the Lord Rahl. The most she would allow was that Kaelin could be her equal in duty to Richard. Being considered an equal by Kara, though, was high praise indeed. When Kara addressed Richard as Lord Rahl, however, she was not saying brother. She was saying precisely what she meant, Lord Rahl. To the men with the angry voices, the Lord Rahl was as foreign a concept as was the distant land of Dahara. Kaelin was from the Midlands that separated Dahara from Westland. The people here in Westland knew nothing of the Midlands or the Mother Confessor. For decades, the three parts of the New World had been separated by impassable boundaries, leaving what was beyond those boundaries shrouded in mystery. The autumn before, those boundaries had fallen. And then, in the winter, the common barrier to the south of the three lands that had for 3,000 years sealed away the menace of the Old World had been breached, loosing the imperial order on them all. In the last year, the world had been thrown into turmoil. Everything everyone had grown up knowing had changed. "I am not going to allow you to hurt people just because they refuse to help us," Richard said to Kara. "It would solve nothing, and only end up causing us more trouble. What we started here only took a short time to build. I thought this place would be safe, but it's not. We'll simply move on." He turned back to Kaelin. His voice lost its fire. "I was hoping to bring you home, to some peace and quiet. But it looks like home doesn't want me either. I'm sorry."
"Just those men, Richard?"
In the land of Andorith, just before Kaelin had been attacked and beaten, the people had rejected Richard's offer to join the emerging Daharan Empire he led in the cause of freedom. Instead, the people of Andorith willingly chose to side with the Imperial Order. Richard had taken Kaelin and walked away from everything, it seemed.
"What about your real friends here?"
"I haven't had time. I wanted to get a shelter up first. There's no time now. Maybe later." Kaelin reached for his hand, which hung at his side. His fingers were too far away.
"But, Richard..."
"Look, it's not safe to stay here anymore. It's as simple as that. I brought you here because I thought it would be a safe place for you to recover and regain your strength. I was wrong. It's not. We can't stay here. Understand?"
"Yes, Richard."
"We have to move on."
"Yes, Richard."
There was something more to this, she knew. Something of far greater importance than the more immediate ordeal it meant for her. There was a distant, troubled look in his eyes.
"But what of the war? Everyone is depending on us, on you. I can't be much help until I get better, but they need you right now. The Daharan Empire needs you. You are the Lord Rahl. You lead them. What are we doing here, Richard?"
She waited until his eyes turned to look at her.
"Why are we running away when everyone is counting on us?"
"I'm doing as I must."
"As you must? What does that mean?"
Shadow shrouded his face as he looked away. "I've had a vision." Chapter 2.
"A vision?"
Kaelin said in open astonishment. Richard hated anything to do with prophecy. It had caused him no end of trouble. Prophecy was always ambiguous and usually cryptic, no matter how clear it seemed on the surface. The untrained were easily misled by its superficially simplistic construction. Unthinking adherence to a literal interpretation of prophecy had, in the past, caused great turmoil, everything from murder to war. As a result, those involved with prophecy went to great lengths to keep it secret. Prophecy, at least on the face of it, was predestination. Richard believed that man created his own destiny. He had once told her, "Prophecy can only say that tomorrow the sun will come up. It can't say what you are going to do with your day. The act of going about your day is not the fulfillment of prophecy, but the fulfillment of your own purpose." Shota, the witch woman, had prophesied that Richard and Kaelin would conceive an infamous son. Richard had more than once proven Shota's view of the future to be, if not fatally flawed, at least vastly more complex than Shota would have it seem. Like Richard, Kaelin didn't accept Shota's prediction. On any number of occasions, Richard's view of prophecy had been shown to be correct. Richard simply ignored what prophecy said, and did as he believed he must. By his doing so, prophecy was, in the end, often fulfilled, but in ways that could not have been foretold. In this way, prophecy was at once proven and disproved, resolving nothing and only demonstrating what an eternal enigma it truly was. Richard's grandfather, Zed, who had helped raise him not far from where they were, had kept not only his own identity as a wizard secret. In order to protect Richard, he also hid the fact that Richard had been fathered by Darkin Rahl, and not George Cypher, the man who had loved and raised him. Darkin Rahl, a wizard of great power, had been the dangerous, violent ruler of far-off Tahara. Richard had inherited the gift of magic from two different bloodlines. After killing Darkin Rahl, he had also inherited the rule of Tahara, a land that was in many ways as much a mystery to him as was his power. Kaelin, being from the Midlands, had grown up around wizards. Richard's ability was unlike that of any wizard she had ever known. He possessed not one aspect of the gift, but many, and not one side, but both. He was a war wizard. Some of his outfit came from the Wizard's Keep, and had not been worn in 3,000 years since the last war wizard lived. With the gift dying out in mankind, wizards were uncommon. Kaelin had known fewer than a dozen. Among wizards, prophets were the most rare. She knew of the existence of only two. One of those was Richard's ancestor, which made visions all the more within the province of Richard's gift. Yet Richard had always treated prophecy as a viper in his bed. Tenderly, as if there were no more precious thing in the whole world, Richard lifted her hand. "You know how I always talk about the beautiful places only I know way back in the mountains to the west of where I grew up, the special places I've always wanted to show you? I'm going to take you there, where we'll be safe." "The Harrens are bonded to you, Lord Rahl," Kara reminded him, "and we'll be able to find you through that bond." "Well, our enemies aren't bonded to me. They won't know where we are." Kara seemed to find that thought agreeable. "If people don't go to this place, then there won't be any roads. How are we going to get the carriage there? The Mother Confessor can't walk." "I'll make a litter. You and I will carry her in that." Kara nodded thoughtfully. "We could do that. If there were no other people, then the two of you would be safe at least." "Safer than here. I had expected the people here to leave us to ourselves. I hadn't expected the Order to foment unrest this far away, at least not this quickly. Those men usually aren't a bad lot, but they're working themselves up into a dangerous mood. The cowards have gone back to their women's skirts. They won't be back until morning. We can let the Mother Confessor rest and then leave before dawn." Richard cast Kara a telling look. "One of those men, Albert, has a son, Lester. Lester and his pal Tommy Lancaster once tried to put arrows into me for spoiling some fun Tommy was about to have hurting someone. Now Tommy and Lester are missing a good many teeth, Albert will tell Lester about us being here, and soon after, Tommy Lancaster will know too. Now that the Imperial Order has filled their heads with talk of a noble war on behalf of good, those men will be fancying what it would be like to be war heroes. They aren't ordinarily violent, but today they were more unreasonable than I've ever seen them. They'll go to drinking to fortify their courage. Tommy and Lester will be with them by then, and their tales of how I wrong them and how I'm a danger to decent folks will get everyone all worked up. Because they greatly outnumber us, they'll begin to see the merit in killing us. See it as protecting their families and doing the right thing for the community and their creator. Full of liquor and glory, they won't want to wait until morning. They'll be back tonight. We have to leave now. Kara seemed unconcerned.
I say we wait for them, and when they come back, we end the threat. Some of them will bring along other friends. There will be a lot of them by the time they get here. We have Kalin to think about. I don't want to risk one of us being injured. There's nothing to be gained by fighting them.
Richard pulled the ancient tool leather baldric, holding the gold and silver wrought scabbard and sword off over his head, and hung it on the stump of a branch sticking out of a log. Looking unhappy, Kara folded her arms. She would rather not leave a threat alive. Richard picked his folded black shirt off the floor to the side where Kalin hadn't seen it. He poked an arm through a sleeve and drew it on.
A vision?
Kalin finally asked again. As much trouble as the men could be, they were not her biggest concern just then.
You've had a vision?
The sudden clarity of it felt like a vision, but it was really more of a revelation.
Revelation?
She wished she could manage more than a hoarse whisper.
And what form did this vision-revelation thing take?
Understanding.
Kalin stared up at him.
Understanding of what?
He started buttoning his shirt.
Through this realization, I've come to understand the larger picture. I've come to understand what it is I must do.
Yes, Kara muttered, and wait until you hear it.
Go ahead, tell her.
Richard glared at Kara, and she answered him in kind. His attention finally returned to Kalin.
If I lead us into this war, we will lose. A great many people will die for nothing. The result will be a world enslaved by the Imperial Order. If I don't lead our side in battle, the world will still fall under the shadow of the Order, but far fewer people will die. Only in that way will we ever stand a chance.
By losing? You want to lose first and then fight? How can we even consider abandoning the fight for freedom?
Andrith helped teach me a lesson, he said. His voice was restrained, as if he regretted what he was saying. I can't press this war. Freedom requires effort if it is to be won, and vigilance if it is to be maintained. People just don't value freedom until it's taken away.
But many do,
Kalin objected.
There are always some. But most don't even understand it, nor do they care to. The same as with magic. People mindlessly shrink from it, too, without seeing the truth.
The Order offers them a world without magic and ready-made answers to everything. Servitude is simple. I thought that I could convince people of the value of their own lives and of liberty. In Andereth, they showed me just how foolish I had been.
Andereth is just one place.
Andereth was not remarkable. Look at all the trouble we've had elsewhere. We're having trouble even here, where I grew up. Richard began tucking in his shirt. Forcing people to fight for freedom is the worst kind of contradiction. Nothing I can say will inspire people to care. I've tried. Those who value liberty will have to run. To hide, to try to survive and endure what is sure to come. I can't prevent it. I can't help them. I know that now.
But, Richard, how can you even think of
I must do what is best for us. I must be selfish. Life is far too precious to be casually squandered on useless causes. There can be no greater evil than that. People can only be saved from the coming dark age of subjugation and servitude if they too come to understand and care about the value of their own lives, their freedom, and are willing to act in their own interest. We must try to stay alive in the hope that such a day will come.
But we can prevail in this war. We must.
Do you think that I can just go off and lead men into war, and because I wish it, we will win? We won't. It takes more than my wishing it. It will take vast numbers of people fully committed to the cause. We don't have that. If we throw our forces against the order, we will be destroyed, and any chance for winning freedom in the future will be forever lost. He raked his fingers back through his hair. We must not lead our forces against the army of the order. He turned to pulling his black open-sided tunic on over his head. Kaelin struggled to give force to her voice, to the magnitude of her concern.
But what about all those who are prepared to fight? All the armies already in the field. There are good men, able men, ready to go against Jagang and stop his imperial order and drive them back to the old world. Who will lead our men?
Lead them to what? Death? They can't win.
Kaelin was horrified. She reached up and snatched his shirt sleeve before he could lean down to retrieve his broad overbelt.
Richard, you're only saying this, walking away from the struggle because of what happened to me.
No. I had already decided it that same night before you were attacked. When I went out alone for a walk after the vote, I did a lot of thinking. I came to this realization and made up my mind. What happened to you made no difference except to prove the point that I'm right and should have figured it out sooner. If I had, you would never have been hurt. But if the Mother Confessor would not have been hurt, you would have felt better by morning and changed your mind.
Light coming through the doorway behind him lit in a blaze of gold the ancient symbols coiled along the squared edges of his tunic. Kara, what would happen if I'd been attacked with her? And we had both been killed? What would you all do then?
I don't know. That is why I withdraw. You are all following me, not participating in a struggle for your own future. Your answer should have been that you would all fight on for yourselves, for your freedom. I have come to understand the mistake I've made in this, and to see that we cannot win in this way. The Order is too large an opponent.
Kaelin's father, King Wyborn, had taught her about fighting against such odds, and she had practical experience at it.
Their army may outnumber ours, but that doesn't make it impossible. We just have to outthink them. I will be there to help you, Richard. We have seasoned officers. We can do it. We must.
Look how the Order's cause spreads on words that sound good.
Richard swept out an arm.
Even to distant places like this. We know beyond doubt the evil of the Order, yet people everywhere passionately side with them, despite the ghastly truth of everything the Imperial Order stands for.
Richard,
Kaelin whispered, trying not to lose what was left of her voice.
I led those young Galleon recruits against an army of experienced Order soldiers who greatly outnumbered us. And we prevailed.
Exactly. They had just seen their home city after the Order had been there. Everyone they loved had been murdered. Everything they knew had been destroyed. Those men fought with an understanding of what they were doing and why. They were going to throw themselves at the enemy with or without you commanding them, but they were the only ones, and even though they succeeded, most of them were killed in the struggle.
Kaelin was incredulous.
So, you are going to let the Order do the same elsewhere, so as to give people a reason to fight?
You are going to stand aside and let the Order slaughter hundreds of thousands of innocent people? You want to quit because I was hurt? Dear spirits, I love you, Richard, but don't do this to me. I'm the Mother Confessor. I am responsible for the lives of the people of the Midlands. Don't do this because of what happened to me.
Richard snapped on his leather-padded silver wristbands.
I'm not doing this because of what happened to you. I'm helping save those lives in the only way that has a chance. I'm doing the only thing I can do.
You are doing the easy thing, Kara said.
Richard met her challenge with quiet sincerity. Kara, I'm doing the hardest thing I have ever had to do.
Kaelin was sure now that their rejection by the Andereth people had hit him harder than she had realized. She caught two of his fingers and squeezed sympathetically. He had put his heart into sparing those people from enslavement by the Order. He had tried to show them the value of freedom by allowing them the freedom to choose their own destiny. He had put his faith in their hands. In a crushing defeat, an enormous majority had spurned all he had offered, and in so doing, devastated that faith. Kaelin thought that perhaps with some time to heal, the same as with her, the pain would fade for him too.
You can't hold yourself to blame for the fall of Andereth, Richard. You did your best. It wasn't your fault.
He picked up his big leather overbelt with its gold-worked pouches and cinched it over the magnificent tunic. When you're the leader, everything is your fault. Kaelin knew the truth of that. She thought to dissuade him by taking a different tack.
What form did this vision assume?
Richard's piercing gray eyes locked on her, almost in warning.
Vision, revelation, realization, postulation, prophecy, understanding, call it what you will. For in this they are all in one, the same and unequivocal. I can't describe it, but to say it seems as if I must have always known it.
Maybe I have. It wasn't so much words as it was a complete concept, a conclusion, a truth that became absolutely clear to me. She knew he expected her to leave it at that.
If it became so clear and is unambiguous, she pressed, you must be able to express it in words.
Richard slipped the baldric over his head, laying it over his right shoulder. As he adjusted the sword against his left hip, light sparkled off the raised gold wire woven through the silver wire of the hilt to spell out the word truth. His brow was smooth and his face calm. She knew she had at last brought him to the heart of the matter. His certainty would afford him no reason to keep it from her if she chose to hear it. And she did. His words rolled forth with quiet power, like prophecy come to life. I have been a leader too soon. It is not I who must prove myself to the people, but the people who must now prove themselves to me. Until then, I must not lead them, or all hope is lost.
Standing there, erect, masculine, masterful in his black war wizard outfit, he looked as if he could be posing for a statue of who he was, the seeker of truth, rightfully named by Zedek as Zul Zorander, the first wizard himself, and Richard's grandfather. It had nearly broken Zed's heart to do so, because seekers so often died young and violently. While he lived, a seeker was a law unto himself. Backed by the awesome power of his sword, a seeker could bring down kingdoms. That was one reason it was so important to name the right person, a moral person, to the post. Zed claimed that the seeker, in a way, named himself by the nature of his own mind and by his actions, and that the first wizard's function was simply to act on his observations by officially naming him and giving him the weapon that was to be his lifelong companion.
This is the end of Side 1. This program is continued on Side 2 of this cassette.